This is Melissa, and it is the 15th of March, 2026, and I hope that you're all doing well. I want to let you know that the CTTM Book Club has resumed, or is resuming, and it resumes a week from today on the 22nd of March. And we are going to try something new, and that is meeting to have a recorded discussion on Zoom. We're going to meet face-to-face, video, on camera. And so if you're interested in participating in that, please email me at cuttingthroughthematrix@protonmail.com. Now, these recordings will be shared in audio form only, behind a paywall on Substack. So the purpose of meeting as much as you can do online, face-to-face, via camera, is we've discovered it's just a nice feeling when you can put a face to a voice. It's nice to see someone, make eye contact, and it just makes the conversation flow so much more smoothly. So we have opened up the Cutting Through the Matrix Book Club chat again over on Telegram. Still keep that going, but we'll be actually meeting to discuss the work on Zoom. So again, email at cuttingthroughthematrix@protonmail.com if you're interested in joining in. Now, we will be covering, as a good preliminary book to Alan Watts' Cutting Through, we'll be covering Carl Jung's The Undiscovered Self. And this was suggested by a member of Book Club. I think it's a great idea, so that's what we'll embark on. The first 2 weeks that we meet is going to be informal as we discuss the upcoming reading assignments. We can talk a bit about Jung, what we know about him, what we may have uncovered, things that we think are worth sharing, and also just an opportunity to get to know each other. I have participated in several live around the table book clubs, and it is nice just to be able to find out who it is that you're engaging in a conversation with. So that, like I said, we start a week from today, and then the actual chapter by chapter, there are 7 chapters in this very slim volume, and that will get started the week following Easter. So all of that upcoming. The Cutting Through books, that the proof is here. And as soon as I finish recording this, I'm going to speak to Ula and Derek Chamberlain, the artist who Ula came up with the idea. She said, what if we found the same images that Alan used in his original books, but better quality, and the quality of text was better? And I thought that was a great idea. So it is moving along, but because it's still got a few more weeks of us looking at the proof, signing off on it, and then getting it back, it seemed that having some time to talk about a different book, and then you would all have the opportunity to catch up and get Cutting Through. I also want to remind you that just in terms of Alan's information and adding that to your collection of things that are well worth studying, Waiting for the Miracle, which we've talked about quite a lot in the last year, that's available in Portuguese, Spanish, and German translations. And so please inquire with me. I would be very happy if some of you got the translated versions of that book. Well worth having everything that Alan ever wrote or said, as far as I'm concerned. I appreciate you supporting me. You can write to me at CTTM, Post Office Box 815, Keene, K-E-E-N-E, Texas 76059, and that's USA. And on the website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you'll see all of the other sites, including the video channels. You'll see how to order and donate via Stripe or Cash App. That post office box will be there for you again. All of the ways to support. And I want to try something a little different too. I have had two paid subscribers, two new paid subscribers to Substack this year. And I think that at that rate, I can certainly take the time to thank you in this format. And that's Jade Muir and Paul. I appreciate that very much. And I won't take the time to read off those who've supported me since I started this Substack in May of last year. But any time one of you orders or donates or makes a paid subscription to Substack, you're helping keep this going by supporting everything, whether it's getting flash drives made or the books or paying for the websites or domain names, etc. And it all adds up, and I really appreciate it. So thank you. Now, last week, a member of my family was quite ill and hospitalized. And I won't go into a lot of details. Some of you, I let know what was going on, and I appreciate the support that you gave me. I want to let those of you who did have an inkling of what was happening know that that person is greatly recovered, not 100%, but to the point that they have been released from the hospital. And so I appreciate your thoughts and prayers. Now, during that time, I was kept quite busy communicating with different members of the family, and I did talk to people that I don't often talk to, members of the family that, you know, they live at a great distance, and we just don't have occasion to speak that often. And I talked to someone who is lovely, and I want to tell you what lovely means to me. Lovely is a kind of person who cares about other people, and they're very sincere in how they approach life, and they live with, as they put it, authenticity. And they want to live a meaningful life that is productive and engaged and always cheerful, always pleasant. And yet, this is the interesting thing about people, lovely or otherwise, is that we're all so different. And we're shaped by experiences that no one else will have. And so one of the things about the CTTM book club that has been so interesting to me is that people have met each other in the real world. There have been several of these in the real world meetings in Europe. I myself met a member of the book club who lives about 2 hours south of me here in Texas. And I noticed that I got an email from someone the other day who lives about an hour north of me expressing an interest in participating in this discussion of Jung's The Undiscovered Self. And I know there are other Texans who may be participating in this, and so maybe I'll have a chance to meet you face to face. So sometimes I say tribe or true tribe, but it is in my head something that is worth trying to do. Is it community? I'm not sure I like that word. I've used tribe, but I recognize people in spirit, you know, that no two of us should be alike. That would be the hope. But that we have enough in common in spirit that we can meet on common ground and have things to talk about. So this lovely person, this family member, is not someone that I would have a lot of common ground with, but still a lovely person, a loving person, a person who cares deeply about her community. And we got to talking about little bit on politics. You know, you always, call myself apolitical, but I wonder if that's even possible. And we were talking about the aggression of the U.S. and Israel against Iran and everything that was going on there. And she said, well, I'm doing what I can here in my local community. And I said, what does that look like? What's involved there? And she said, well, I am very involved in my local council, and there's a lot of school board corruption and council corruption, and I try to keep an eye on that and be active against that. I boycott Amazon. I don't buy anything from them or any of the big box stores. I buy local. I try to go to farmers market and support local markets and local growers. And then she went on to discuss other things that she was doing there. So this lovely family member is someone that you could also describe as woke. They support diversity and equity and inclusion. And so it can be challenging anytime we meet anyone, and this is life. This is what relationship is like, probably in any time and any location in history, is that you are either going to be butting heads with people who are different than you, or you're going to listen and learn and allow, or, like I say, you'll be butting heads all the time. So her background and the things that she's been exposed to and her understanding of history and geopolitics and the machinations of things is very different than my understanding. And I've never felt that it was my job, my place, my calling to show people who have not expressed an interest in, there's been no inquiry into my worldview, and therefore sometimes it's just better to listen and to be an observer than to impose your worldview on other people. Now, after we got done speaking, I reflected very carefully on everything that she said that she was trying to do to make the world a better place. And the word that she said several times was community. I'm doing what I can to make a difference in my community. What is a community? We start with the family, that is, you know, the first tribe. And then you go out from the tribe. So a family connects with another family and still another family, and then you have community. But I know in this situation that it is one lone family. So they have found community, and I didn't get into a deep conversation about where that community was springing from. What I knew was that it wasn't family, and I knew that it wasn't church. So this is a construct that she has made with her community. It's a construction. And I think in a way we all do that. I was just talking about CTTM Book Club. It's a construction. We're constructing something, and that has allowed us to meet digitally and in the real world, and we have certain things in common. We think that Alan Watt's work was exemplary. It was life-changing. It helped us see the world in a very different way. So you can call that a community, or the basis for some kind of community. And the next thing I thought of when reflecting on the conversation that I had with her was communitarianism. And I realized it would be impossible for me to reconstruct the conversation that I had, but I realized that the way in which she spoke of what she was doing and what was going on sounded like it was coming from a handbook on communitarianism. Now, the funny thing is that I did not choose today's redux because of communitarianism. I chose this redux because of the undiscovered self. I did a keyword search for when Alan Watt was talking about the undiscovered self, and this was on a list. So this is from December the 9th, 2010. It was Alan Watt, Cutting Through the Matrix, live on RBN. Here is his poem. Peace is the absence of all opposition. You'll eventually volunteer for local agrarian, showing you're a good citizen and communitarian. Strange how the similarities of Soviet ideal, which never materialized since it was unreal, are introduced worldwide as the final solution to claimed overpopulation and people pollution. Could those same families with historical mission who created foundations, gave us nuclear fission, and directed great wars while profiting well, be still striving to bring in their utopian hell? Upon the whole earth, with people modified, public unsuspecting, their masters lied. Yes, the goal of these families won't cease or desist till their dark world is manifest. No thoughts exist. And when I chose this because of the undiscovered self, I noticed that it was a good follow-up to the real history that I had with Neil Foster, because we were talking about overpopulation and depopulation and measures that sound like it's really good for the environment, but when you study it carefully, it's depopulation. So I got into listening to it, and here came the communitarianism. And Alan talked about communitarianism quite a few times and what it really was. And he has talked about it in the context of the Soviet system and the Soviet story, which I've talked about recently again, reminding you of this. Now, I want to read a little bit and then tie it into some homework that I was doing. Gramsci and others talked about the ways to take down other countries, and they thought about Russia too, where they could do a fast takedown. Mass slaughter. Get the slavery system working fast to bring in canals, roads, and literally go through these people like they were all units of machines, so many machines per day. Like 60,000 could die on this project, 60 or 100,000 on that project as they ran out of calories and so forth. And then he goes on to talk about the German camps and IG Farben, etc. And he said, there's the articles up today about them bringing in the new system of communitarianism for America, for the U.S. That's the Rockefellers. And he goes on to read from an article there. I think I noticed this was a dead link. You can find it, a fresh one. It's 10 new cities picked to receive service leadership grants. I was about to say you can find a fresh one over on archive.org, but as a matter of fact, I already looked, and it's truly a dead article. But it's no matter, because you can find that Bloomberg and the coalition of mayors is still very much on the go. Alan said, okay, I'll put up a link here. It says Rockefeller Foundation funding communitarian volunteerism for the U.S. And I'll put a link up to the Rockefeller site. You can see them dishing out millions towards this as well. And don't forget, the Rockefeller Foundation has many front foundations, which take the heat off the Rockefeller Foundations, who also chip in lots of money. It all comes from the Rockefeller Foundation, of course. So they're so misleading, these people. It's the same families that ran and helped finance the Soviet Union and then the Nazi state under the IG Farben group, and they're in charge of you now. And getting back to what I was also saying, they had different ways of bringing down countries, some by fast slaughters and starvation. It was the fastest way to do it, kill off millions. But in the Western world, it's take over your food supply. So, and this is the redux that I'm giving you. And I did just a little bit of looking into communitarianism, and I'm going to share a few things, and I'll quickly tell you what some of those are. When I started looking up communitarianism, of course, I read the wiki page on communitarianism. When you're talking about ideological communitarianism in an economic sense, then you're going to end up discovering a man named Amitai Etzioni. And I will put up a link to him. You can learn about him. He was an Israeli-American sociologist. His family was born in Germany. They ended up in settling in Palestine and what was then Palestine. In 1938, the family changed their last name from Falk to Etzioni, and it goes on to tell you a very interesting story about his childhood and how he came to change his first name too. He is, he passed away a few years ago, an Israeli-American sociologist, best known for his work on socioeconomics and communitarianism. He founded the Communitarian Network, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to supporting the moral, social, and political foundations of society. And he established the network to disseminate the movement's ideas. His writings argue for a carefully crafted balance between individual rights and social responsibilities, between autonomy and order. And I want to point out, I've used this illustration in the video that I've made to go along with this, where you see it's basically a dialectical, it's a square. And on one side, you have left and right, conservative, liberal, and on another, on the bottom part of the square, you'll have communitarianism. It may be flipped, actually, but you've got communitarianism versus individualism. And you'll see variations on this square, the two dialectics, quite often when you look into communitarianism. So communitarianism is pitted against individualism. So look out for that when you're doing your homework there. But when I wanted to find out more about this communitarian network that Etzioni started, the very first place that I ended up at was New America. Now, I remember Alan saying, be careful, be cautious around anything that says it's new, the New Deal, new ethics, new, you know, what was wrong with the old? But anyway, there's New America. And I saw a few things that linked the New America, this think tank, to the World Economic Forum's website. And then I typed in a keyword search, you know, New America and the Aspen Institute, just to see. And I came up with something that, you know, showed me that, you know, the New America is not in any way, of course, affiliated with the Aspen Institute. However, they have partnered on policy discussions in areas of technology, civic engagement, social equity. And Aspen Institute's, as their policy academy, has had senior advisors that have also had experience with New America. So some interesting connections there between Aspen Institute and New America, and New America and the World Economic Forum. So I went over to their website, And one of the very first things I like to do, if it's possible to find out, where's the money? Show me the money. Follow the money. And on New America's website, they so cooperatively allow us to see their funding right there on the website. No digging, no looking for tax returns, some of the things that I've done in the past, it's all right there. And you can search in different ways, but the way that the chart shows up is by donor amount. And they start with the highest amounts first. So if they're not showing you their funding, you can look at it funding by year, but you can also see the large amounts that have come in. So I see a lot of names there on their funding that I recognize, starting with Open Society Foundations, Ford Foundation, Gates Foundation, Walton Family Foundation, that's Walmart, Simons, that's a big company out of Germany, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, you know, I'll hear some of these things on public radio, William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, Bloomberg Philanthropies, and it goes on and on. There's 12 pages. Now, the very first donation was the largest. That was Pivotal Ventures, LLC. And I realized that I did not know who Pivotal Ventures, LLC was. And $10 million is a huge grant, and that the website there describes it as general operating support. Well, Pivotal Ventures LLC is Melinda Gates. So not only did the Gates Foundation, I mean, this is just the first page here. I see a Gates Foundation contribution of $4.9 million. And one of just over $4 million, that's Gates Foundation. But here's $10 million from Melinda Gates. Let's see what else here. Lots and lots. There were individuals who donated as well. I saw something from the foundation that Chan Zuckerberg, that's Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, I don't remember her name, but the Chan Zuckerberg Foundation, they've supported individuals, including the actor Ashton Kutcher. He gave a sizable donation. So quite interesting to follow the money here. And lots of Rockefeller money. Just as we're learning from Alan in this talk, the Rockefeller Fund, Rockefeller Brothers, they don't just give money directly to a certain cause that they want to fund. They fund something like New America. So this is what Wiki says about New America Organization. Formerly the New America Foundation, it's an American liberal think tank founded in 1999, focused on a range of public policy issues, including national security, technology, health, gender, energy, education, and the economy. It is based in Washington, D.C. and Oakland, California. Now, names are always interesting to me. Who's in charge here? And the CEO is a woman by the name of Anne Marie Slaughter. Love it. She is the think tank's chief executive officer. Now, there was a little bit of a scandal because someone that was in the employ of New America praised the EU's antitrust ruling against Google. And that resulted in that employee of New America being fired, which, of course, Slaughter said had nothing to do with influence by Google on her or the organization. So I won't get too deep in it. I'll put this up, and if it is interesting to you, you can get deep into it yourself. But New America, you're not going to see on their website, "Oh, we're all about communitarianism." You won't see that, but you start to see the talking points that connect people to the ideas of communitarianism. And at one place I saw, yes, New America does support the sociological and economical and political concepts of communitarianism. I found something when I was looking into Amitai Etzioni when he passed away a few years ago. There was a site who was praising him and talking about communitarian thought. And the site was called Millennial Journal. I did not know who they were, but here is Millennial. Catholicism, Communion, and the Common Good in the Third Millennium. Highlights of the Responsive Communitarian Platform. With the passing of Amitai Etzioni, we are looking back at his contributions to communitarian thought and organizing via the Communitarian Network. In 1990, a group of academicians and social thinkers came together to formulate the core ideas they shared, spelled out in the Responsive Communitarian Platform, and to spur the movement toward a recasting of the social and moral foundations of society. Did you know that your social and moral foundations needed recasting? Well, I think we can all figure that out now, but I don't like the idea of somebody recasting them for me. A quarterly journal, The Responsive Community, Rights and Responsibilities, was founded in 1991 to provide a forum for the development and exploration of communitarian ideas. So there is a lot here. Again, I looked a little deeper into Millennial and some of the people behind that. I looked into something called the Catholic Worker Movement. And the Catholic Worker Movement was founded by Dorothy Day and Peter Morin in 1933 to live in accordance with the justice and charity of Jesus Christ. So there was so much going on around the time of the early days of the what you could call the Soviet system that tied in with some of these. They called this Catholic anarchist activism, and they were worker houses, and it was Christian pacifism. And you'll find that when you look into Amitai Etzioni, pacifist, anti-war. I don't like war either, but I don't want to be part of a movement that ends up telling me how to live. I think that that's about all I want to take the time to share with you today. I'll post these links up. I'll give you another good talk from Alan, and I hope that you have a good week, and I hope that some of you will be joining us next Sunday, the 22nd, via Zoom for book club. And this will be just to get to know each other, talk, meet, say hello, and I think it will be fun. Take care.
There's a code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 9th of December 2010. Now newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and bookmark the sites listed there. These are the official sites I have. If you find problems downloading, then try these alternate sites and you might find a cleaner download. So many folk go into the com site at once, sometimes it gets kind of sticky on the download. So try that. Now they all carry hundreds of audios of the talks I've given over the years, and they all carry transcripts of a lot of the talks I've given in English for print up. And if you want transcripts in other languages, go into alanwattsentinel.eu, and you'll find that you've got a variety to choose from. And that's also listed on the com site. And remember, too, that you bring me to you, keep me going by buying the books and the discs that I have on my site for sale. That's the only income I have here. I don't bring on guests to sell you items or anything like that. So you can buy these books from the US to Canada by using a personal check. You can use an international postal money order from your post office. Some people just send cash to order any of the items I've got listed there on the website. Just send a separate email after the donation with your name, address, and order on it, and I'll get it out to you. And it's the same across the rest of this big wide world here, which is getting awfully small, it seems. So that's the way to order the various items. Just send a donation followed by an email with your name, address, and order, and then I'll get that out to you. On this show, I don't get sidetracked often by what the major mainstream news tries to give you as news, because we're living in a big fantasy here where you don't know who the heroes and the zeros really are. And the more you understand history, especially the 1800s, 1900s of the present time, you'll find there's way more behind the big players that come forth in history to do the big changes, whether it be communism, Nazism, or any other ism. And they're well funded by the same people, it seems, all the time, over and over again. It's astonishing. And of course, the best way to give someone a cover is to come out as a hero who's been persecuted too, so that I even stay away from the whole idea of WikiLeaks and so on. Some of it just doesn't strike me as right. So I don't fall for what I perceive to be a possible counterintelligence program on the go, especially when mainstream takes the data and runs with it. Most of it's gossip, but the relevant parts are that Iran is bad and so on, and these countries we want to attack are simply bad, which falls right in with the whole agenda that the New American Century published to do with the countries they wanted to take out, and the list, in fact, that they wanted to take them out into, which, of course, was to start with Afghanistan, then Iraq, then Iran, then Syria. And I can't see why they'd change their minds. These guys don't sit for 100 years to plan part of their future and then backtrack on it because of public opinion. Public opinion really doesn't count for much, to be honest with you, and that's the reality, too, of the history and the times in which we live. Most folk are the way that Albert Pike described them. Not very pleasant, but very, very truthful. If you want to use your own brain, your meat's on the table, and beasts of burden by choice and consent back after this. Hi folks, I'm back and we're cutting through the Matrix. And the Matrix movie I often refer to because there's so much in it to do with a reality and then another reality hidden within the movie itself that most folk miss all the time, because there's many messages there, and there's messages for the ones who actually control the world in there as well, of course. They do like to put in their little jokes on the public, who always miss it and blow the bubble gum and chew their popcorn, and they walk away thinking they've been entertained. But that's how culture creators really work on your mind. They program you for things to come, and often get you to even rebel about things which you don't even know about, really. Universities are famous for getting rebellion started by indoctrinating the students with a new idea of freedom and bolstering their egos, thinking they're the cutting edge, it's all up to you, and they never know they're being used for another part in the big plan. It doesn't matter if their side wins or loses, because the plan depends on having opposing forces. And it's a synthesis that comes out of it that's important, that leads to the new thesis. That's what they call really managing evolution by forcing its hand, speeding it up. And thousands and millions have been murdered and slaughtered in revolutions down through the ages, especially in the Soviet Union. And so now and then, just to keep my hand in and my head in to reality, I do watch some of these documentaries, which are pretty horrific. Most folk don't want to see them. When you see bodies getting dug up from mass graves and people trying to identify people that were relatives and so on, most avoid that like the plague, because we seek pleasure and we avoid pain. That's what they count on at the top. But until you understand that, unless you really look at the horrors of the world, then you're simply biding your time until the next horror occurs, and not generally involve you. That's how it's done. But I've talked about the Soviet story. I've also put links up, I think, to a story about Bulgaria that was also under the Soviet dominion, and the big monsters who ran the same system there. And people don't realize that the Soviet system was run on slavery, really from its beginning to its end, with massive concentration camps. Lenin himself said that, and Trotsky actually embellished on it, and he said that he didn't see why. It used to be thought of, you see, that forced labor would never be very efficient, and he said that he didn't see why it couldn't be made efficient. And the route to prove, by imprisoning millions and millions and millions of people and working them to death, basically, for big, big projects, to prove that it could be done by forcing them to work. And of course, Nazi Germany, that was also socialist, picks up on that thread. And in the Soviet story, you actually see the teams that were sent out by Hitler to meet the Russians, who were already expert at the disposal of vast amounts of bodies. Incredibly efficient they were. And you must watch these once in a while if you can stomach it, to bring you back to a reality, because otherwise you're sitting ducks for what's coming down right now. And you've got to tie in your history to it as well. I also watched one, I think it was called In the Shadow of Hermes, which touched on the Masonic, pre-Masonic links too, and revolutionary Freemasonry. But it also had a lot of good footage in it too, of the big monsters who slaughtered, and some rather awful pictures of them digging up corpses and so on. The same thing that we saw in Argentina and elsewhere, under the dictatorships, where the grandmothers protested, and eventually they managed to get some of the relatives dug up in bits and pieces. Awful stuff to watch, but it's something you got to see, because if you're unaware of these things and you prefer to hide your head in the sand like the ostrich, you're sitting waiting for it happening again. But going back to what I've already learned down through history, is there definitely is an organization that's been here for an awful long time, run by the richest people on the planet, there's no doubt about it, who do still sit, abide it all, and above it all, and they run it all very efficiently by controlling money. They run the money, they run the foundations, and they're going strong today by pushing the envelope to the next step of what they want for a society. And you got to understand too that some people like Gramsci, it was, that came up with a lot of the communist ideas and plans. He, like Bernays, because it was taught long before Bernays, said that if you can't get society to accept what you want them to do, then we have to alter the culture of society. And that's what they did, of course. They do it all the time, in fact. You've gone through the cultural changes, your parents did too. None of them knew that they were being guided by the big money powers towards a certain ending, a certain goal. And few will ever catch on to that in their lifetimes. I think in 1998 I was on the radio and I talked about images you'd have sometimes in dreams, and images that would come to you in daydreams when you're concentrating and thinking about something. And I thought of mountains, pyramids in fact, of dead bodies, just pyramids for the generations of dead bodies who lived their lives, slaved for the system, whatever system it was, down through the centuries, had their beliefs of the reality they lived in, and fought wars for their masters and died, never ever knowing there was a much bigger game at hand and running it all, never knowing a darn thing of true reality, never knowing, never catching on. And I thought, it's bad enough, you know, when you hear of rapings and murders and so on, but when your mind has been stolen, your right to know has been stolen and kept from you, and a fiat put in its place, that's the worst rape of all. And that goes for most folk on the world today who are under a scientific socialism, and they don't even know that. yet. But Gramsci and others talked about the ways to take down other countries, and they thought about Russia too, where they could do a fast takedown, mass slaughter, get the slavery system working fast to bring in canals, to bring in roads, and literally go through these people like they were all units of machines, and so many machines per day, like 60,000 could die on this project, 60 or 100,000 on that project, as they ran out of calories and so on and strength. That was quite acceptable, and IG Farben used the same techniques for the German camps in World War II, which were primarily set up and privately owned. Most folk don't realize that, by IG Farben, the camps in, that Germans had, to work the people to death. And they worked out how much time and labor they could get out of each unit or person. Just like a machine, you see. So, living in this world today, it's interesting to see the same names that helped fund, say, for instance, the communist revolution, like the Rockefellers, and how they even hired the biggest Madison Avenue PR or propaganda company, we call it marketing today, in New York to write up glowing reports on these heroes, these champions of the people, like Lenin and Trotsky and all the rest of them, who all, by the way, had private bank accounts with millions of dollars eventually, robbed from Russia and put into Switzerland for the folk who thought they were all altruistic people. And these Rockefellers still run things today. They've got, there's articles up today about them bringing in the new system of communitarianism for America, for the US. They're funding it now. They're putting money out there, big money. And they all have their NGO front groups to help guide society into the same system that Britain is rapidly going into. It's quite something that's happening. And the public know nothing about it. They, because they can all ages, they go along adapting through things in a semi-conscious state, almost somnambulistic state, really. But the public have no idea what's really going on. Now, there's an article here. It's 10 new cities picked to receive service leadership grants. It says in the second round of awards, Mayor Richard R. Bloomberg, I think he's an awfully rich character too, according to Wikipedia, and Nashville Mayor Carol Deans, bipartisan coalition of mayors, cities of service are calling them, will award grants of up to $200,000 to help to 10 new cities. The money paid over 2 years will enable the cities to hire chief service officers whose job will be to help increase volunteerism and help the cities respond to critical local problems. You understand the same technique in Russia is being used here, adapted slightly different from, say, England to the US. They don't use communitarianism so much in the US because some people, and a few in the US, don't remember what the word communism meant, you see. So they used service. And I told you years ago, too, under the Council on Foreign Relations agenda, they were going to bring the whole world into service to the world state. And this is part of the road to service to the world state. That would be your function in the world eventually, if they allow you to be born, is to be born to serve the world state. And now they're training a generation into communitarianism under different guises, under volunteerism, you see, as they withdraw your essential services, etc., and you deal with things locally, supposedly, and they bring you down to a bare subsistence level. Again, going back to the Soviet Union, they had to adapt their techniques in communism to different countries, even then. And they slaughtered millions and millions. In the first year alone, there was over 1.5 million people slaughtered, and they rapidly stepped that up, and then they killed about 160 million altogether with different famines and slaughters. And because depopulation has always been part of this same agenda by the same people, and the same people are running the world today, and you should be absolutely terrified. Back with more after this. Hi folks, we're back and we're cutting through the matrix. I also put up the link tonight Well, it says Rockefeller Foundation funding communitarian volunteerism for US. I'll put the link up to the Rockefeller site itself, and you can see them dishing out millions towards this as well. And they also, mind you, don't forget, the Rockefeller Foundation has many front foundations which take the heat off the Rockefeller Foundation, who also chip in lots of money, and it all comes from the Rockefeller Foundation, of course. So they're so misleading, these people. And remember, too, as I say, these are the same families that ran and helped finance the Soviet Union and then the Nazi state as well under the IG Farben group. They're in charge of you now. And getting back to what I was also saying, there are different ways of bringing down countries, some by fast mass slaughters and starvation. It was the fastest way to do it, kill off millions. And another way was to, in the Western world, take over your food supply, alter your food supply, bring in certain diseases that were not known before, especially crippling agencies that would put you out of the mating business. No one wants to mate with someone who's always sickly. You see? Many ways to do the same thing by the same people, of course, who've always had at the top of their list to drastically depopulate the world from the useless eaters, as they call them. And some people, like Brzezinski, actually called them the cattle in his own book. Interesting terminology they have, and how they perceive, and how they've been taught to perceive since birth, these particular characters, the rest of the general population. But, as I say, they're giving leadership grants to bring in communitarianism and volunteerism under different guises, different names, all the same thing. And you will get appointed your local commissar, of course, and you'll have your little NGO group running over you, and they'll try and get you to participate in the decision-making. Not that they'll listen to you, but it's good to make you think that you are participating. That's how they run these things, exactly the same as the Soviet Union. And remember, the Soviet system was blended with the West years ago, in fact. Exactly as the Rees Commission came out with its findings, that was the 83rd Congress that authorized that investigation into the tax-free foundations. And that was listed in the other book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It's an excellent read on what they were up to, and they told them, the people, quite clearly what they were up to, and that was to blend the Soviet system with that of the West, you know, through cultural changes and so on, quietly, easily, until folk would adapt without even knowing into socialism. And it's happened long ago, and they did attack the family unit, all the things that Karl Marx said they'd have to do to eradicate it, and religion, of course, as well. Because religion was the old way of basically keeping a society intact under one system or another. They've all been used. But this is a more scientifically efficient way, they call it, to do the same thing. Now, I'll read this article for you too, and I'll also put the link up for it at the end of the show. But it's called Atheist Psychology in a Scientifically Rational World. Professor Richard Dawkins is a huge star in Britain. He has sold millions of books and presented various television series promoting atheism and extolling the virtues of science. And of course, he's paid and pushed by the big boys. That's why he's made a star, you see. Everybody who is up there is always paid and pushed to get up there. You don't make yourself a star. And he's also a head member, I think, of the Humanist Society. He says his recent global bestseller was The God Delusion. And of course, they're putting posters, that this organization's funding posters to be put on buses saying God is dead and all that kind of stuff, all the Nietzsche cliches. He says, being a Darwinist, he promotes a purely materialistic view of the world as the best way forward for mankind. I wonder what he means by man. When they use mankind, they're not referring to themselves, by the way, or, you know. And sometimes they are referring to themselves, but themselves only. So I remember reading Dawkins' The Selfish Gene when I was an impressionable teenager. The message of the book is that all animals, including us, are gene machines, meaning we are designed with the sole intention of passing on our genetic material. That is, like a virus. That was also in The Matrix, by the way, as the virus itself in The Matrix told Morpheus what he thought of humanity. All moral and spiritual capacities are the design of her genes' blind desire for success. This is what this character says. And they actually teach this now, you know, biological classes, that you are just a simple, everything that comes into your head, your outcome, whatever you do, your personality, is all the culmination of all these genes competing inside you for supremacy. This is what they tell them. This is a belief system, folks. Humanism is a belief system. Anyway, it says, this message has had a profound effect on me. I felt like a self-aware android perceiving my cold mechanical nature. In this worldview, all the human qualities that we find life-affirming, such as kindness, laughter, creativity, etc., are the extravagant disguise of the virus deep in the core of ourselves. Dawkins also referred to memes. Like, I prefer memes. That's how it's spelled. Because, see, meme generation is really every generation, and that's why they don't listen. Anyway, it says the hypothesis that ideas act like genes. They are separate and distinct entities that act in their own selfish interest to reproduce. Dawkins stated that religious beliefs are viruses of the mind. They debilitate and infect the infected host by making them delusional and wasting their time and money. They spread using threats and tricks, he says. I'll be back with more of this after these messages. Folks, we're back and we're cutting through the matrix. Reading an article here, which I'll put up at the end of the show, put the link up for it, on Dawkins, really, and his secular humanism idea. And of course, the whole idea is to once again destroy any thoughts of independence, individuality from you. That's the whole idea of Dawkins' mission, which is well paid for by the big foundations and all the usual players, of course. Same names crop up all the time across the world, don't they? Anyway, and down through history, I should say, too. It says here, religions and belief systems have been used to control societies. The idea that atheistic scientific rationalism will create a utopia on Earth is itself a belief system. And we saw that, as I say, with the Soviet Union as they slaughtered their way through, I think it was 300 and odd million people eventually by their grand total when the walls came down. What are the political and psychological connotations of the scientific utopia idea? Well, this is what they're after. Atheism removes the spirit, knocking man down to the level of basic animals. That's exactly what Julian Huxley said had to be done. Leaving individuals to know they are and will remain nothing more than an underdog with no inner meaning to his life. Conquering modern man by ripping out his spirit simply by altering his perceptions. And I remember, he's going to quote Carl Jung here, and I remember reading that in the late 90s on the air, this very part, because he put it right in perspective. In the book, The Undiscovered Self, he said, one of the chief factors responsible for psychological mass-mindedness is scientific rationalism, which robs the individual of his foundations and his dignity. Isn't that the truth, eh? Just think of all the airports and what you're being, how you're being humiliated and dehumanized today as you go through all the process of groping and so on. It's scientific, you see, it's to save you, keep you all safe. Jung gave the example in education to show how this process works. Scientific education is based in the main on statistical truths and abstract knowledge, and therefore imparts an unrealistic rational picture of the world in which the individual as a merely marginal phenomenon plays no role. That's exactly what came out of communism. You're a cog in the wheel, in the machine. So scientific education is based in the main on statistical truths and abstract knowledge, and therefore imparts an unrealistic rational picture of the world in which the individual as a merely marginal phenomenon plays no role. You're nothing. You're just one of billions, and your life is worth nothing. That's the message it's meant to get through to you. So the idea is to create an easily controlled conformist mass and to crush the spiritual individual who may question power. Remove spirituality and the state, along with the malleable public opinion, becomes the supreme moral authority. Now, Wells and all that said that they'd all have to do it. All these characters in the past have said the same things. Jung writes that in an atheistic society, the state uses the same psychological techniques as a church to replace it, in order to replace the church. The state, like the church, demands enthusiasm, self-sacrifice, and love. And if religion requires or presupposes the fear of God, then a dictator state takes good care to provide the necessary terror. For the harder thinking, I'll repeat that one. The state, like the church, demands enthusiasm, self-sacrifice, and love. And if religion requires or presupposes the fear of God, then the dictator state takes good care to provide the necessary terror. A lot worse terror, too, I should add to it. The state teaches us our values, which are political correctness, your updates, and our purpose in life, which is to be a good citizen taxpayer. The church leads societies to consensus through scripture. The state leads by the atheistic worship of rationality. It must be true, you see, it's scientific statistics, you see. The belief is that a perfectly rational mind will logically reach the best answer to a problem. However, numerous factors can make a logical conclusion incorrect. Globalization, the UN's educational department, UNESCO, that's where your children are getting brainwashed from, are helping create a scientific rational world populace. Organized religion has been a wonderfully effective form of control for the elite for thousands of years. Certainly Christians will agree to this when it comes to Hindus, and Hindus when it comes to Christians. But now established religions are on the chopping board, as they are a hindrance for a global society, which is a standardized society. This is all stuff I've said, obviously. The unquestionable belief in all scientific rationale, true and false alike, is filling the ever-weakening religion gap with the belief of progress to a science utopia becoming dominant. So it says here, at the same time, new age religions are promoted as global in character. They tend to use the phrases, we are all one, nature, animals, and humanity have an interconnected consciousness. It's all one global consciousness. It's like Buddhism, you know. UN award winner Lord Bertrand Russell, who is from the dominant minority class, wrote in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, that science is used to strengthen elite control. And that was 1952. The effect of the telegraph, this is what he said, the effect of the telegraph was to increase the power of the central government and diminish the initiative of distant subordinates. This applies not only to the state, but to every geographically extensive organization. We shall find a great deal of scientific technique has a similar effect. The result is that fewer men have executive power, but those few had more power than such men had formerly. We are ruled by science, so we're required to faithfully believe in it. Flawed scientific studies and theories go down the memory hole to join the Royal College of Surgeons, Piltdown Man. And the Piltdown Man, if you know, was taught as fact. You know, was one of the Neanderthals that they'd found supposedly, and it was shown in museums and taught in school. You could folk pass their degrees on writing their thesis on it, and then it was found that someone stuck the jaw of a pig on that of a human skull, and no one had bothered to test it. Anyway, Richard Dawkins, this guy who's pushing all this, who's well funded to push it, of course, he's playing his part as an actor on the stage. He's now called Darwin's Rottweiler, and he's a preacher of our new religious belief. And there's a bunch of links on this site too, to go to different university sites and so on, to give you more on all of these things that are mentioned in this particular article. So I'll put this up at the end of the night, and you can read it for yourselves. Now, there's callers on the line. There's Tom from Albion there. Are you there, Tom?
Yes, Al.
Yes.
Today I had a flashback. I was watching the film from London, and, of course, it reminded me of the Peterloo Massacre when the Limeys brought in the cavalry, you know, after they worked them over with the 6-pound cannons, and then they killed hundreds of people and gave their heads to the Manchester United as soccer balls.
Yeah.
Also, reminded me of Tony Pandy when Churchill in 1910 called in the troops after they blew up the mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were miners there, and they were working like these 12-hour days, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted better working condition. They blew up the entrance to the mine. The people rioted. It reminded me of the Highland Clearances. Are you Scottish?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I know the whole agenda.
The rifle butt in the mouth, bayonet in the gut, and get rid of them. And also, the boiler plug riots in Duke Wellington. I'll let you handle that.
Mm-hmm. But as I say, the key is to this. I mean, even the players you're mentioning there had more in common with each other than they had over the people that they ruled. Winston Churchill's mum was from New York, for instance, with quite a colourful history, and related to more people than you'd ever imagine who are still main players today. And in fact, his mother became the mistress as well of the king for years. So it's an interesting movement of certain people breeding in to other nations and then taking them over and then becoming the epitome of that nation by draping themselves in the flag. It's quite an interesting history in every single country this has been done in. And really the technique is no different, really, because whenever I see armies, people should shudder. They should shudder when they see armies of any kind, even what you think is your own. Because armies are always used eventually upon their own people. And believe you me, the military mindset does not impress me at all, any more than the guys who obey orders and slaughter people they don't know. They don't know about geopolitics. They don't care to know about geopolitics. They don't know why they're there. The basic propaganda is enough for them. They want to go off and kill. And they don't hire the brightest and the best for military at all. The brightest and the best are really psychopathic types who are carefully selected to get up into the higher officer class. That's always been the way. And even the US founding father said the same thing, that it was a massive debate about having a standing army. And I think it was Jefferson and a few other ones got round that by creating the Marines. Technically they're an army, but technically they're not an army. They're supposedly naval, you see. So it's a clever alteration these guys are awful good at in wording and perception to get an army on the go. But that's the problem with today. Power itself is always used on behalf of the people. Even today we see we're living through it. We've got all our rights stripped off us. They're taking more all the time. They're going to ensure that we're monitored 24 hours per day, every single individual on the planet. And this is all supposedly to keep us safe. And it's also to see if you're politically correct and if you're going to continue with your upgrades and agreeing that things that used to disgust you are now okay with you. If not, you'll get pulled in for reconditioning. This is what's coming down today. And really, when you see the organization of the biggest capitalists on the planet, the 60 families that throw around billions of dollars every day on the stock market, they raise companies up and sink others when they want to. When you see them and their predecessors in the same family lineages setting up Nazism, setting up communism, funding it to the hilt, and still running what's to be happening in your own countries, you should be shuddering. Don't fall for the left-right paradigm, because these characters control both sides. They are the body of the bird. What you see and vote for are the wings.
And that Cameron, the prime minister, he's Jewish, and he's under the control of the Rothschilds.
Well, there's no doubt he's under control of the Rothschilds. I know they're stinking rich and attached to one of the biggest banking families in Britain. And of course that's why he's there. These guys know why they're put in. These guys are picked years in advance of becoming prime ministers, and they're even told when it's their turn to be prime minister, probably about 10 years ago or more. And it's the same in America, and it's the same in Canada too. And Carl Quigley said the same darn thing. He says there hasn't been a prime minister or a president of the United States has got into their country that was not a member of this particular secretive group, and which eventually was called the CFR. It says since the late 1800s, every one and all sides must be a member of the CFR, or they don't even get to run.
What about the Bullingdon Club? That's another one that Cameron is in it.
Oh yeah, but his old job too is to play his role. It's not conservative. Forget conservative and Labour and all that nonsense. Because that's why I left Britain. I couldn't believe that people were swallowing all this stuff. There's a huge agenda. Cameron's put in to supposedly decentralize government, which is bringing it down into communitarianism level in the local area, where the average person is going to be left to wangle and plead for cash to have a hospital bed for maybe 500 people in his little area. They'll be running off to the World Bank, these NGO leaders. That's how the Soviet Union was actually run too. Technically, it was supposed to be run that way by their NGOs. They call them the little Soviets, ruled by councils. And that's the system they're bringing in here, more improved to fool the people under the guise that we're all broke. Meanwhile, they're giving out billions abroad to Britain's paying China to build hospitals for Chinese because they're still classed as a third world country. So is America. America's putting, as they bring in the new pretense of healthcare for everyone in the US, and it's a pretense only, you're going to be one hell of a shock when you realize what it is. You're also paying for the building of hospitals across China and India now, and that's an up-and-coming country. And when you see who put the money into Brazil, Rothschild was in there just like he was into India, that these new emerging nations, as they say, that have to skyrocket to the top. The Rothschilds, I gave the links up when it happened. And when they bought all the farmland from all the farmers they put under in India, same thing in Brazil. They brought thousands and thousands of acres. And when they pump the money in, that's why these countries rise to the top. That's why they rise up. Not because they did it by their bootstraps. Neither did China, as you well know. So it's an amazing world we're living through. A few people run this planet here. They have an agenda. They know exactly where they're going. They've got thousands of think tanks working on it. They've got think tanks working on the 22nd century right now. And all the objections they'll receive from what they want to introduce into society then, and how to overcome those objections before we even hit it. That's what they did with the 20th century and the 21st century as well. Now we'll also go to Tom from Wisconsin. Are you there, Tom?
What?
Yes.
I'm here, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yep, just hear you. Yep.
Well, that's excellent. I thank you for the work that you do. And what I've noticed is, am I trying to track all the movements on this giant geopolitical checkerboard, which is black and white, of course. I noticed that NPR, when I listen to that in the mornings on the way into work, and they have BBC on there, they're really lining up in about a six-month window from the time that there's some kind of crisis to the propaganda to get us to go in the direction that they want us to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it specifically on NPR. They keep running, as an example, a sort of news story presentation of how in one of the Norwegian countries, they're actually charging the citizens to cross bridges,
mm-hmm,
as a, you know, like a travel tax or a, they don't call it a carbon emission tax.
Yep.
They call it a congestion tax.
Yeah.
And it just seems to line up so well, the propaganda, with what's going on in Mexico right now and all the things that I have heard so far up to this point. And I just wanted to get your comment on NPR and the state-run media and how you see that working right now.
Well, the state-run media, there's no doubt about it. All you're going to get is propaganda. There's no doubt whatsoever. And they will train your mind in preparation because they know how you think and work through things. You work through things by the way they feed the information to you. And I'll go into that when I come back from this break. Hi, folks. We're back and we're cutting through the matrix and we're talking to Tom from Wisconsin. Are you still there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I was mentioning NPR, and I just wanted to get your analysis of what the state-run media's function is, I mean, and we kind of get a basic understanding of it, but, I mean, go into some detail, if you could, about how NPR actually itself is tied into this New World Order control system.
It's all your thoughts. You must be given your reality from the state, and the state itself has funnels, they funnel millions of dollars every year into culture creation, they call it, the Department of Culture. Every country has got a Department of Culture. And you think, well, we are the culture. Why would you need a Department of Culture? Well, its whole point and purpose is to change culture in a guided direction. And so they give out your reality to you via what they call news. And they actually program you step by step, alter your way of thinking towards something which should be, you should be wary of, and then get you to accept it. And it's all done in a subconscious way. It's a psychological techniques. They have experts working, preparing this stuff. And it's marketed actually into your mind through marketing techniques, in fact, all using psychology. And one book to read on the culture creators is the CIA's Cold War, the Cultural Cold War, it's called, the CIA's involvement in the culture creation business. And they haven't stopped today. It's still ongoing, not just in the US. The CIA have offices all across Europe, where they also are involved in giving you culture. These are the guys who helped once again promote humanism by bringing out the art that was surrealistic. It wasn't even surrealistic, it was nihilistic. And they promoted this kind of stuff as the end thing, because they knew they had to make us depressed in a sense, and take us from the values of life that we used to have and bring it into this new kind of machine-type system of distortion, where nothing makes sense, we're nothing at all, we are just amoebas, and bring down us by taking all beauty out of art. And they've been awfully good at doing it. They also, the state also funds all groups for radical change. I was astonished in Canada when I went into a club. I was asked to sing at the club, in fact, when someone recognized me, and I sang a song, and they said, "Can you sing something more radical?" And I said, "Well, why?" They said, "Well, we get funded by the government for radical change. We want stuff to, for radical change." So I looked it up, and sure enough, the Canadian government, the US government, every government in Europe has a Department of Culture, and they give grants out to all authors, novelists, even children's authors, to promote ideas of rational, radical. It's got to be radical change. That's turning up society upside down. And when you follow it all, it's exactly the same as Karl Marx wanted, with the destruction of the male from the family unit, get him out of it. Bring in the women, because he said it was easier to control society through the female. And eventually alter and distort all their ways of thinking. That's what every government's on board with this. You've never ever had anybody out there, any country listening, you've never had your own government serving you. Never been. It's definitely not since World War II, for sure. Hasn't happened. Yeah.
Well, it seems that this information is really like a soft kill operation, much like the chemtrails.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's perfected propaganda under the guise of news and exposés. Yeah. You see, you can alter the mind by just withholding half of the rest of the truth about any one topic, and you'll come to the desired conclusions. But from Hamish, myself, from Ontario, Canada, that's the music coming in, so it's good night. I mean, your God or your gods go with you.